Welcome to the Amplifying Leadership Podcast. I am your host, Tara Lehman, a partner, coach, and consultant at Twin Life Coaching and Business Services, of which Amplifying Leadership is a division. This podcast is dedicated to amplifying your leadership through our guest stories, tips, information, and more. To learn more about our leadership division, please visit us at amplifyingleadership.ca. Today, I am welcoming Chelsea Rykus, a trailblazing entrepreneur and the award-winning founder and president of Ethos Benefits. Welcome to Amplifying Leadership.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
And I'm excited to have you because it's a very interesting topic and it's probably a hot one these days. But before we get started with that, I'd like my audience to know who we're talking with today. So give us a bit of your background around leadership and where you are now.
Absolutely. I think something really interesting from the pretty much the moment I was born and growing up, my dad would always say, there's two types of people in the world. There's leaders and there's followers. Mm-hmm. And that has just stuck with me my whole entire life. And it was clear very early on that I would presume the role of a leader, right? Team captain, everything you could possibly imagine. If there was a chance to lead people, I wanted to do it. What was really interesting is I sustained a brain injury in college playing college softball.
Oh, wow.
So that really changed the trajectory of my life. And instead of going to med school and pursuing this dream of medicine, I ended up opening my own insurance agency after going through a brain injury rehab program. Wow. And I learned, so a very crazy story, but one of the hardest things I've ever gone through, but one of those really transformational, pivotal things, right? Mm-hmm. But something I learned really early on is just because you think you're a good leader doesn't mean you actually are, right?
Like, yeah, it's very true.
Right? Leading a sports team is different than leading 20 employees or 50 employees. So that's my leadership journey. I came into a new business. I founded it at the age of 25, had absolutely no idea what I was doing, made all the mistakes that you could possibly imagine, including hiring, firing too quickly or too slowly on either one, micromanagement, toxic positivity, which we'll talk about today. Mm-hmm. And then I hit this kind of inflection point where my business was growing so fast. We were having so much success on the sales side, but I was having a really hard time with my talent. And I was the bottleneck to the business. And it was then that I realized I needed coaching. I needed to listen to podcasts. I needed to read books. So that was about 6 years ago. And since investing in actual leadership and being coached the right way to do things, our business has been transformed. We sold part of it last September and have moved up market and hired a lot more. So it's been really good.
Very good. It's one of those live and learn situations of leadership, right? We all make mistakes when we start. And sometimes maybe you have to make those mistakes in order to become a better leader. I think that, you know, mistakes are okay as long as we learn from them and we grow because of them. If we ignore that, you know, then that's the bigger problem, right?
100%. Yeah.
So we do want to talk about toxic workplaces. And we know that they're out there and they're around for sure. And I know that this is, you know, you like to talk about more about the discussion around discouraging toxic motivation in the workplace. So first of all, tell us, why does this really resonate with you? Why this topic?
As a Canadian, so I'm a Canadian that came to the States to play softball, opened up my own business and just became an American citizen in January.
Congratulations.
But thank you. And Tara, you probably know this culturally. I think there's an effort to be very nice, to be very kind as Canadians, right? Like it's almost instilled in us from when we're young.
So true.
You know, it's had this people pleasing tendency my entire life. And what I've learned during business and through all the leadership development and the coaching was the right way to give people feedback, hold people accountable, and really truly lead and not people please, not operate from a place of fear. And in the process of my learning, I created a toxic working environment. And I'm super open and honest about my mistakes as a leader. I think that's the only way that, you know, you can provide value to others so they don't make those same mistakes. So I'm, you know, open book, willing to share all my mistakes. And obviously I'm sharing them because I'm through it. Although there's, you know, every single day you make a mistake as a leader, it's all about accountability. But my point is that I very much, because I didn't know how to lead and how to manage talent and how to recruit talent and, you know, develop them, I just was like, everything's great. Everything's great. As long as we have that positive mindset, as long as we see the bright side, everything's fine. And, you know, if you do that in business or in your personal life, what you're really doing is you're ignoring the core piece of you that's out of alignment.
Mm-hmm.
So this really resonates with me on the personal and professional side. But on the personal side, you know, when you're people pleasing or when you're not speaking your truth, you become out of alignment. And I think a lot of leaders are very in touch with when they feel in alignment with their values or not. And I just went through a long period of time with my brain injury where I was out of alignment and I wasn't speaking my truth. And I instead kept telling myself, you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. There's a silver lining. And there wasn't. I was out of alignment. And I just needed an honest, real conversation with, you know, myself and a therapist about the real raw emotion. Because if you don't sit with the real raw emotions, you're never going to make your way through it. And the same is true in the workplace.
So there's a couple things that you mentioned that I think are really important that I just want to touch on real quick is the idea that we do need to get help when we need help, whether that be a counselor, therapist, coach, mentor, whatever it is. Those are really key pieces to leadership, you know, whichever one works in that moment. Maybe you do more than one. You know, I've worked with clients who I have a coach myself as well as a therapist. You know, I mean, it's whatever you need to get you back to your true self or your true values. I love that you mentioned that. So thank you for bringing that up.
Well, and I think it's really important for all levels of entrepreneurs or leaders, right? Like you're never seasoned enough to not learn something. And something I've noticed that's been really interesting is the coaching and the leadership development that got me to my first $1 million business is not the same. It's vastly different than the skill set needed to get to 5 or 10, right? So recognizing that we don't know it all. You know, yes, we're the leaders of our company and everyone's looking to us and we feel like we're on top of the world or on the bottom sometimes, but either way, we're in control. You feel good about that. You don't know what you don't know. And that's the biggest risk to a business is what you don't know. And you can hire coaches. And I highly, highly encourage anybody listening to just not be afraid of that. I have two coaches, actually. They're a man and a woman. And they've coached us for 6 or 7 years. They're amazing. And I actually just hired another coach who's helping me more on the personal side with public speaking and having a sense of agency as I take the stage. We're speaking a lot nationally. So, you know, and here's another thing I'll say about that. Sorry, I get really passionate about this topic.
That's okay. It's a good topic.
You always hear people say, I can't afford coaching. That's too expensive. And I think that's the biggest cop out in the world. I think I could barely pay my $2,000 office rent when I first started my first company. And my husband, who founded the company with me, said, we need coaching. And I was like, absolutely not. I'm barely making payroll. I'm barely making rent. Are you kidding me? And he was like, no, we need to do this because if we don't, we're going to pay for it later. So we found the money. You make sacrifices. And it's been the most beneficial ROI we've had in our business.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a coach, because I haven't been a coach all that long. I was in corporate I've always had two coaches, one for my business when I started it, but also a personal one. They just keep you accountable to that next step or that next level, whatever it is, right?
Absolutely.
I also want to come back to something else that you touched on, which is the fear that leaders have and the people pleasing that we feel we sometimes need to do. So if we have, you know, employees not working well together, but we just want to keep everybody happy. So they'll be like, oh, that's just Chelsea. She just does that. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Those types of things. And I think it's really important that we talk a little bit about what you were stating, because fear can hold us back and can cause toxic workplaces. So just, I'm wondering a few more thoughts around that topic from you today.
Absolutely. One of my biggest lessons when it comes to this specific situation is the worst behavior that you tolerate from an employee is the culture of your business, period.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
You know, like I've told myself so many times, we had an employee, I mean, everyone's had this employee, the MVP, the person who performs so freaking well. And you think to yourself, man, how would I run my business without them? But this person's late. This person has a bad attitude. This person mm-hmm. thinks that they should run the company, right? Like mm-hmm. they aren't necessarily fitting into the culture of everybody else, but shit, they're a good performer, right? And it's hard when you're especially a younger entrepreneur or newer in your business to see past like, this is toxic and this is going to be a huge problem. And whatever that is, the tardiness, the disrespect, that's actually the culture of my company because I've tolerated it. And I said those things you just said, oh, don't worry. It's just so-and-so. Mm-hmm. He's like that, but he's great. No. Yeah. And I know we're going to get into it, but the real kind of core of toxic positivity is regardless of the circumstance, you're negating people's emotions around whatever the situation is. So mm-hmm. it's essentially dismissing either, good or bad behavior. I mean, there's also, I'll stop because I could just keep going. Sorry. I agree. This topic.
It's a good topic. And I agree. I mean, we have high performers and some of them you do need to do those disciplinary processes with, because if you keep them, your business will actually start to potentially go the wrong direction because you're allowing for people to be unhappy. You're allowing for turnover or what might come of it. So let's talk a little bit about then the reasons that toxic workplaces exist. Mm-hmm. Obviously leaders could be one issue, especially the fear around, the people pleasing thing, right? What mm-hmm. other reasons are there that you see with regards to this topic?
So I see in my experience, it seems to be when there's toxic positivity, a lot of the times there's these few things present. Number one is micromanagement. Number mm-hmm. two is a lack of support. Number three is, and this is big, and I find myself guilty of this still to this day, inconsistent and unfair practices. Mm-hmm. So-and-so can do X, Y, Z, but the other person, oh, absolutely not. Right. Mm-hmm. That is an absolute recipe for a toxic workplace. Mm-hmm. A competitive culture rather than collaborative. A big one that this is where I went wrong was valuing my sales team more than my service team. That right there. And I'm lucky enough that I get to consult hundreds of companies across the country on their benefits program. So employee benefits, if you're Canadian, means nothing to you. Well, you have a different version of it. But if you're American, like that is the way you get healthcare. Like there is nothing more important than your health. And that's how you get your healthcare is through your employer, right? So I have this inside peek into hundreds of cultures, hundreds of businesses, and really get to have these amazing relationships with these human resource professionals and CFOs that are leading culture, right? Mm-hmm. And you see things like being resistant to change, things like the blaming culture, right? Like mm-hmm. somebody's always got to be wrong. Well, then you create fear and that paralyzes employees. And then mm-hmm. you expect them to take initiative to get something done and you're pissed off when they don't. But why would they possibly do that?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And I like that you bring up the blame piece because I used to, tell my employees when I was in corporate, but also my clients now is don't blame a person. Blame a process until you can figure out if it's a person, right? You should see her face right now. She's like, Tara, I agree with you.
Oh my goodness. That is my second favorite piece of advice is manage processes, not people. If you're blaming people, that means your processes are shit and you don't have a way to hold people accountable. You don't have a transparent system. Oh, you got me. Yep. That is a good one. Yes.
Yeah. And if you look at the process, you could realize that shoot, I forgot to train Chelsea on this customer that she now has. So it's not actually her fault. It's mine or it's a process.
Most of the time that's the case, right? Like it's usually the leader's fault.
Yeah, exactly. And I also wanted to come back to something interesting that you mentioned that happens a lot. And I obviously do a lot of talk about this with my clients, but when they look at the sales team being the best part of the business, let's make sure we talk to them, we praise them. But without the rest of the team, those sales go nowhere. You need your customer service. You need accounting to pay the bills. You need that warehouse space, that manufacturing plant, that hospital, whatever it is.
Yes.
You need those people. So if a great sale goes through, you need to praise the entire organization or team that put that together, because it's not just sales. I love that you mentioned that, because that can create toxic atmospheres when we praise one group when there's so many more people feeding it, right?
Yeah, 100%. I know in our business, you know, the service side is retention. So in employee benefits in the States, once a year, a business gets an opportunity to renew their benefits program. And at that point, you know, you survey employees, you evaluate the culture, you see what are the real needs of these employees. Do they need more fertility benefits? Do they need mental health benefits? What do we need to really like boost the culture and the morale of the people that we serve? Getting an ROI on human capital, right? Like, but what you can see sometimes happen is there's just a total lack of understanding of what people actually need. And this isn't necessarily with my clients. My clients are really amazing, but there's just this, yeah, they're absolutely wonderful. But there's this, sometimes leadership isn't willing to like look that deep, right? Because they're kind of scared of what they're going to find. Maybe they're going to find that like everybody hates their manager, and that the MVP situation we just talked about. Yeah. Like there's just no, sometimes you just don't know where, if you become, if you're not a transparent culture and you try to become transparent, you know, like the sales and the service, like something we do in our business that has been so transformative for culture is we used to only show retention numbers. So we would show how's the service team performing? How quickly are they responding to requests? How many clients are renewing each year? Like we had all these retention statistics that we were reviewing on a weekly basis. But guess what? I wasn't showing how many phone calls our sales team made. I wasn't showing, you know, because that we had a separate meeting and that was different because sales, sales, sales. When I brought everybody together and we have these key performance indicators per role, and it's super transparent, myself included. So I literally show my team every single week how many times I picked up the phone and had a conversation with a prospect or a client.
Right. I love
And it's
that.
Embarrassing. Like this week I made 5 phone calls because we have a huge event tonight and all the excuses in the world, but they get to see that. They get to see that. It's really
it's
cool.
It's transparency, like you mentioned earlier, and also collaboration and making sure the team is together rather than being quote unquote siloed, I guess, in some cases, right? Absolutely. Yeah. Let's look at this at a different angle now.
Okay.
Tell our leaders or those listening, how can we discourage this and then promote a healthier workplace culture?
So I think number one, I just want to be super clear on like toxic positivity, guys. It's not just everybody's happy. Like you have to be happy. You can't ever express a negative emotion. It can also be dismissing people's feedback. It can be superficial cheerfulness, an expectation that every time you come into a meeting, you need to be a different version of yourself than who you actually are in that moment. And then also avoidance of problems. I don't think a lot of people would cue in toxic positivity to avoidance of problems, but they are very related. So now that I just wanted to make sure we all were kind of on the same page of what it is from a addressing it standpoint. Number one is encouraging open communication, which when I used to hear things like this, I'm like, this is so fluffy. Like, how do you actually encourage open communication, right? Like, what does this look like in practice? Mm-hmm. And what it is feedback.
Yep. 100%.
And would you agree with that?
100% agree with that. Leaders should always be asking for feedback on themselves, processes, business, whatever it is, right? Absolutely.
I follow this framework for feedback, and I have my leaders in my business follow it, as well as actually every single employee. But the key, so I'll share the framework here in a second if you're interested.
Perfect. Yeah, absolutely. Feel free.
But one thing I would say about the timing of feedback, a lot of the times we wait, right? Like we hire a new talent, we take them through the interviews, we take them through onboarding. And then once they're here, we're like, okay, they've got their 90 days. Let's see how they do. And then at their nine, this is typical for business, at 90 days, we're like, so here's some things, blah, 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 blah. I suggest instead, the feedback starts in the interview process. And literally, like, so I designed a process. It's a 5-step. I like the number 5, apparently, because all of my frameworks are 5 steps. But I just realized when I said it, I'm like, what's that? But in the interview process, asking for feedback, like, hey, I sent you over that recruitment kit. Did you take a look? What did you think? And just What did you think of that first conversation we had? You did some research on us. What did you think? What's your initial reaction? Hey, here's the values of the company. Like, how do those sit with you? And then when you hire them, this is where it's key. So you take your employee through whatever onboarding process you have. Ours is 4 weeks. Every single day, to the point where I think my staff is like, is she serious? I will give them a call at the end of the day when they're new and say, hey, what went well today and what didn't? They'll tell me. And I'll say, how can I make it better for the next hire? And they're like, really? I'm like, yeah, tell me. What seems redundant? What did you waste time on? What doesn't make sense? You get the most incredible feedback. And the key is they give you feedback before you give them feedback. And now they know that it's a safe relationship. And when you start giving them feedback, which you should do at the end of the first week, absolutely, it's a safe circle that's happening because you've received it and you've shown them in how you receive it, how they should receive it.
And I just want to touch there about the questions at the end of the day. Like, they're not saying, how can I do better as, you know, your leader or whatever. It's process-based and they're very simple questions to ask. Yes. And how can I help you more tomorrow or whatever? Those are amazing questions and so simple. It doesn't have to feel like a chore to ask for feedback.
No. And I'll tell you a quick story. One of my employees about a year ago, I didn't really realize this. We use Google for absolutely everything in our agency, right? And our meetings were happening on Zoom. Every meeting with the company was within Zoom. And his feedback on the end of his first day was, I'm just curious why we don't use Google Meet if we use Google for everything. Because we're all in one place. And I was like, that's a very good point. Yeah. Okay. Let me look at that. And then literally the following week, we implemented it and everybody was like, oh shit, this is so much easier. And
it's just great.
Little things like that. But I bet he felt like, wow, cool. They actually listen, right? Like they care about what I think. I've had employees in the first couple of weeks, Excel wizards that are so much better than me. They come in and they look at something and they're like, hey, I think that commission project or whatever it is, I think that we could create a workbook for that and it could be automated. Okay.
Love automation. Right?
Yeah. And it's because like you figure those really, you know, those key efficiencies out because you give people the opportunity to be heard. And that's really what the employees in our modern workforce want. They want to be seen, they want to be heard, and they don't want to have to fake who they are. They want to show up as the person they are and feel that alignment that we just talked about leaders needing to have, all people need to have, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you're going to be there for 9+ hours a day, you want to feel aligned with the company you're at. And you want to feel good about collaboration and sharing ideas and even issues if they see them, right? And I think that's really, really important.
I don't know that I addressed like how to fix it well enough. Do you want me to go back into that?
Yeah. Is there just ways that we can discourage these types of things before our workplace? Yeah.
So validating people's emotions, I find to be very powerful. So, you know, just letting people know, we have a very open culture. So like somebody might say, for example, I just had an employee who lives in Oklahoma and a tornado literally came through her town. And she was very lucky. Her and her kids were super lucky. A lot of people weren't in the town, but a tree fell on her house. She lost internet. Like it was devastating. She had no power for a week. She was obviously upset, right? Like that's a pretty terrible situation. And so when she got a generator and could come back to work, she voiced some of her concerns in the chat and everybody was there for her. We're like, holy crap, that sucks. Like we were texting her, we were checking in on her and nobody was like, at least your house is still intact. Like at least nobody died. No, that would be toxic positivity. At least. No, honestly, that situation sucks. And I'm really sorry that you and your family are going through it. What can I do to help you? That's the conversation we had. And guess what? She showed up to work, even though I told her, you don't need to like go deal with your house. You don't need to be here. She wanted to come to work because she wanted the positive environment because she could show up as she is, which is stressed out.
That's amazing.
Doing her best, you know?
Right. Yeah. That's amazing. I love that story because, you know, when we have those things that happen to us, we absolutely need something good around us. And if going to work is good, that's awesome. That's great culture in a workplace, right?
Yeah. And I think just being able to, on like the broader kind of perspective, like avoiding toxic positivity is having feedback and accountability. And I'll share the framework now if that's okay.
Mm-hmm, yeah, go ahead.
So the feedback framework that I've taught my team, and it's worked really well, is number one is you want to ask people if you can give feedback, because there's going to be times, and this is where toxic positivity comes in, you know, like let's say someone's having a really crappy day and it's all over their face, it's all over their emails, like you can just tell they're not in a good space. Probably not the day that you're going to be like, hey, let's have a conversation, right?
Yeah.
Like, unless it's a timely situation with a deadline or whatever. But if it can wait till tomorrow, I would highly recommend waiting till tomorrow. So you ask and you say, hey, are you in a place where you can receive a little bit of feedback? I literally do this all the time. Like if somebody shoots off an email and I'm like, cool, you addressed X, Y, Z, but I need you to provide a solution a little bit faster. I shoot them a quick email. Hey, I have some feedback on this email. It'll take 2 seconds. Call me when you can. Right away, they'll call me and we'll be like, hey, and we talk it through. And they're like, yeah, you're right. Let's do that. And it's not a big deal, but you ask. So number one is ask. Number two is when you get the feedback, you need to acknowledge it. So you would say, thank you. What I heard you say is, I didn't propose a solution in the email. Is that what I heard you say? That's the acknowledge. So ask, acknowledge. Now here's a key. Number three is appreciate. You need to say thank you. Even in the moment, if you're like, I don't really feel great about this, you don't have to agree with somebody's feedback to appreciate the fact that they tried to give you feedback. And I've had that a lot as a leader, right? Like I've had employees come and give me feedback on something where they lacked context. Once they had context, they probably wouldn't have given me that feedback. I just had to provide a bigger picture for them. So in that case, if I don't agree with them, I still say, thank you. I bet that was hard for you to come and have this conversation with me and bring that sensitive topic up. I'm very grateful that you did that. This is what I heard you say, blah, blah, blah. From there, this is the key. So we've asked, we've acknowledged, we've appreciated. And now here's the part where you accept the feedback or you don't accept the feedback. So if you accept the feedback, that person's right. You're like, you know what? Yes, that's a great idea. I don't have all the answers right now. Why don't you put a proposal for me together for this new technology that's going to make your job easier with financials? I'll review it next week and we'll decide by the end of the month. Or if you don't agree with it, so I'm trying to think of a recent example, but nothing's coming. If you don't agree with the feedback, you can say, oh, you know what? I know why you're saying that. And here's the context that you're missing. Explain the broader situation and then say, do you still feel your feedback to be valid or accurate, knowing what you now know? And I would also apologize in that situation. I would say like, hey, I'm sorry that I didn't share that with you and that was your experience, but does it make sense to you now? And that's how you negate or deny feedback without saying you're wrong. Yeah. You know, you're, because guess what? That person's never going to come back and give you feedback again.
Yeah.
And the last one is act. So we've accepted it or we haven't. And then what are you going to do about it? Somebody gives you feedback. The most important thing is acting on it, right? So coming up with a plan of action.
Yeah. I love that. Those are five easy steps, things that I also talk about with people as well, right? It's a collaborative conversation, really, to, especially if they miss something or you miss something, you can really decide what that looks like. And I love those five pieces, and they're all A's except for the don't accept, but I love it. So I'm sure you and I could go on and on and on.
I know,
today,
sorry.
This is such a hot topic, but so I want to just give you a chance to, if our audience wanted to reach out to you or learn more about you, is there a way that they can find you online?
Yeah, LinkedIn's best, Chelsea Rykus. So it's Chelsea Rykus, Rykis, and that would be the best place to reach me.
Excellent. Thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your experiences, your examples, which is always great, and of course, your tips.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Of course, we want to thank our audience as well. We do hope you were able to gain some valuable information or tips from Chelsea today. If you are a leader who knows that coaching, consulting, or community are the way to grow in your leadership journeys, please visit us at amplifyingleadership.ca, a Twin Life Coaching and Business Services division. Until next time, please be safe and be an amazing leader or leader to be.